Vegas Golden Podcast. We have reached week two, day five, I believe, of our A Player a Day preview series going into the season. Today's player, one of the utmost importance, regardless of what you think of him, Nate Schmidt, defenseman, who really kind of helped flip Vegas's fortunes last year, missed the beginning of the season, came back, and they were a whole different team. I'm Case Kiefer, joined by Justin Emberson.
Hello.
Justin, Nate Schmidt.
Yeah, he's a guy. He's as far as being on the beat, he is probably the most fun person to talk to. He's entertaining. He gives good, thoughtful answers while also keeping it energetic. So he's a fun guy. He's locked up for, what are we at now? Five more years, I think. Six after this season. He's a cornerstone of the team.
Yeah, I feel like I should have screamed or something like he does at the start of games to open this one.
Yeah, my Twitter background is a screen grab of him, his screaming, it's nighttime to start the game.
And that's been a constant for two seasons now, right? He's got to be a big favorite.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be yelling the nighttime this time, right?
I sure hope so. I want him to skate out there with a microphone and do it from the ice. I can dream.
Well, Nate Schmidt, I mean, energizing the Golden Knights from, I mean, pregame in the locker room to that it's nighttime to on the ice. I teased it early. I probably jumped the gun. We probably should have eased our way in it. But I do think the story of the Golden Knights last season, as far as Nate Schmidt, was him coming back and kind of solidifying the defense. They were really struggling in that area. Now, I know it's not always only one player. They had a really tough early season schedule. But you had to have noticed there was a big difference when he got back in the lineup. And he really helped shore up some weaknesses that Vegas showed early.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The first 20 games of the year when he was suspended, the team did not look like it was going to make the playoffs. Like, they were in trouble. And then his suspension ended, and he was a big reason that they were able to click. Like you said, I'm not going to put it entirely on one player. There were a lot of reasons, a lot of ways that they improved. But having that energy back in the dressing room and back out on the ice no doubt played a factor in kind of their season turnaround, in which they cruised into the playoffs pretty comfortably.
Absolutely. So back-to-back years, and of course we don't want to go back too much to 2 years ago, but I think everyone would say Schmidt also had a great year in the Golden Knights' inaugural season. He was a guy who wasn't getting a ton of playing time in Washington, came to Vegas as an unknown, and was kind of the top defenseman right away. So year one, success. Year two, success. Where does this leave him going into year three? This will be his age 28 season. So yet another guy. It feels like we say this about every guy that is kind of entering his prime. But, you know, what's going to measure a success for Nate Schmidt this year?
I think just kind of doing more of what he's done. I mean, he's locked in at a pretty he's starting to make good money this year. That extension kicks in, so he'll be making $5.95 million against the cap. So, I mean, that's not nothing. That's a pretty good amount. That's more than William Karlsson's making as far as that goes. But as far as being the most expensive defenseman on your team, that's a reasonable hit against the cap for a guy who has been pretty consistently about a point every other game. He was 76 games, 36 points 2 years ago. Last year it was 61 games, 30 points. So he's averaging about half a point a game. So you kind of know what you're going to get out of him. He plays against the top lines for the team every night. He played with Braden McNabb for about a year and a half, switched Derek England for the second half of last year. So you kind of know what you're going to get out of Schmidt. I think that as far as an aging curve, like you said, he's 28, so that shouldn't hit for a while. I think I said it a couple of times last week, it's a pretty reasonable contract. I don't think the Golden Knights have a lot of bad contracts on their team, ones that they'll regret, and I don't think this is going to be one of them either.
Yeah, I think he was a guy, and this was true of a lot of the Golden Knights players last year after that crazy first season where you came into season two wanting to know, like, is this real? I mean, that was a career year in a lot of ways. I know not huge on you know, goals or points even, but a lot bigger than anything he had done before. And you wanted to see if it was just going to kind of be a blip or if it was something he could maintain. And certainly it looked like he maintained it. He was, again, you know, maybe their most trustworthy defenseman. That being said, I mean, you still look at him as kind of the de facto number one guy on the blue line. And I think there's a case that could be made that that's problematic.
Yeah, I mean, he is probably the best defenseman on the team. Whether or not you believe in Shea Theodore, who we'll get into, what, next week after? I don't know. I don't have the schedule in front of me. But he's one of the best defenseman on the team. He might be the best defenseman on the team. In an ideal world, though, in my mind, you'd rather Nate Schmidt be the number two defenseman. So if you could have maybe a star defenseman and not have to rely on Nate Schmidt to be the guy, I think is kind of what you'd want in an ideal world. Now, obviously, there's only a handful of elite star defensemen in the league that really drive points, that drive possession at elite range. Only one defenseman last year, Brett Burns, was a point-per-game player over 82 games. But if you look at Schmidt, he was, like I had said, about half a point per game. So let's say that he played all 82 and he finishes with 41 points. That would tie him for 27th in the league among defensemen. The numbers get even worse when you look at some of his 5-on-5 numbers. At 5-on-5 last year, he had 13 points. And he picked up some power play points, so I don't want to knock him too much. But he did have 5 points against an empty net. His 5-on-5 points, 13, that was tied with Nick Holden and Colin Miller for fourth on the team, and Merrill had more points, John Merrill did, in fewer games. So he's not exactly the point-driving possession player at 5-on-5 that maybe some people think that he is. And, like, I mean, I started this podcast by saying how good I think Schmidt is. I do. I just don't think that he's necessarily a number one defenseman. And I think in the 2 years of the Golden Knights, that has kind of been their one deficiency. Even though they are driving possession well and defensive numbers across the board are good, they don't kind of have that guy who's going to potentially challenge for a Norris that you'd like to have in a Stanley Cup contending team.
That makes a lot of sense. I love that. That's the content I need now. I feel like I'm like, things are bouncing around my brain because I came in here thinking maybe Nate Schmidt's a little bit underrated, if anything. I know locally we know how important he's been to the team, but I feel like when you hear people externally talking about the Golden Knights, he's not a guy that usually comes up, but I think he's been every bit that vital. But then again, I I'm not a hockey guy, so if I say something ridiculous, you can always just... I don't know, shake your head. Hopefully you get some enjoyment out of it. But I do know that that is kind of like the new age of hockey thing, which I totally subscribe to, that thinking that your top defenseman should be more of a offensive driver, a point getter. And Nate Schmidt's not at that level of what you would want if you believe in, you know, the analytics and the more advanced numbers that say how important that is for your top defenseman.
Sure. And it's, I mean... Like, I think some of the knocks on some of the offensive defensemen in the league are that they don't play defense very well. Brett Burns, I think, is a prime target for that, particularly among Vegas fans. But I also kind of subscribe to the theory that if you're a defenseman who's getting points, it means that you don't get a whole lot of points from your defensive zone. It means you're playing in the other end, kind of the best defense is a good offense kind of theory. And the Golden Knights have relied on Schmidt to be their number one guy. He's led the team in time on ice per game at 5-on-5, but at a points per 60 rate, he was sixth on the team in points last year. And this isn't just 5-on-5, just the raw points, like I had said, but at points per 60, so we're... including the fact that he does lead the league in time on ice, or lead the team in time on ice, excuse me. He was sixth behind John Merrill, Nick Holden, Brad Hunt, Shea Theodore, and Colin Miller. He was only better than Braden McNabb and Derek England when it comes to that. So, like I said, he's a good defenseman. I would want him on a team. I would want him probably paired on my top line, but I think I would like him to be kind of the secondary guy on that top pair as opposed to driving play.
I think you make a pretty strong case, and I... wish I could argue more with it, but I think you're right on. It makes a lot of sense. That being said, I don't think that the Golden Knights are in some, you know, major hole because of this. I think we both expect Nate Schmidt to have another good year. And, you know, he's not going to turn into an offensive juggernaut or anything, but like we said, he's still at that age where he could make another leap. And who knows, maybe he could be, you know, more impactful on offense than ever before this year or the next.
Yeah, he definitely could be. And I think when... We'll talk about it more on the Shea Theodore episode, but I do think that Theodore kind of has that potential to be that point-getting kind of 60-point guy that Schmidt, I just don't think, ever will be, and that's not necessarily a knock. And part of the thing that I gave you all those numbers about why Schmidt wasn't good at driving points, but he does face the best that the other team has to offer every single night. And there is that. But his numbers dropped last year midway through the season. His possession numbers, expected goals, and even goal numbers while he was on the ice when he moved from pairing with Braden McNabb to Derek England. Maybe that has something more, maybe that says more about Braden McNabb and Derek England about him, because Shea Theodore was the opposite. But if he's your number one driving guy that you want to have, maybe who his partner is is shouldn't matter as much, and maybe that's not a fair estimation, but like I said, I like Nate Schmidt a lot. I think he's a really good player. He's signed at a reasonable cap hit. I just don't think that he's a true number one defenseman.
Speaking of his partner, I think that's something we have to touch on now that we've crossed over into the defenseman. What do you expect from the pairings this year? Any difference with Nate Schmidt, or what do you think about that?
Well, it's interesting because Shea Theodore did see his numbers spike once he was paired with Braden McNabb, who was Nate Schmidt's partner for better part of a year and a half. Schmidt then worked with Derek England. So I'm curious to see if they want to go back to that McNabb-Schmidt pairing, if they want to keep that England-Schmidt pairing, or my personal thought is that if they're going to play a rookie defenseman, and they've said multiple times that they plan on having a rookie on the blue line, they kind of had Shea Theodore play with England for years to kind of ease him into the league as kind of a young offensive defenseman to play with a stay-at-home kind of older veteran player. I think that's something that they could do with whoever wins the job out of camp. And then I liked what Theodore and McNabb would do. And then just almost on a process of elimination, kind of leaves Nate Schmidt and John Merrill as maybe that first or second pair. And I think with the way that we saw John Merrill improve leaps and bounds from the start of the year to the end of the year, I think a Merrill-Schmidt pairing could be really interesting. And we've seen that Schmidt can play on the left or the right side, so whichever side Merrill's comfortable with, Schmidt can play the opposite.
Yeah, I love all the possibilities. This is not even really from a strategic point of view, but just, you know, as someone that follows this team all throughout the year, you know, fan or otherwise, I feel like I just want to see the different pairing. It makes things a lot more exciting. I mean, to me, I know you're a hockey guy, but an 82-game regular season of hockey is a long time for me. It can be kind of a drag, and I want to see something to keep my attention a little bit. I think that happens when you see some different personnel pairings, and I think that the Golden Knights got, as you teased at the beginning when Gallant switch things up last year, I think they saw some benefits from that. So I hope that we see Schmidt with some different guys this year.
Yeah, and I think we will. I think whoever he starts on opening night with probably won't be the guy that he finishes the season with. I think he'll play with a couple of partners this season.
All right, well, we're crossing into new territory here. If you've listened to any of our first podcasts, you know we like to finish off with a prop bet, all of which we had taken from the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook. But we were more on the big name level guys, the first liners. They actually don't have one on Nate Schmidt or anyone we're going to be doing this week, so I just had to make up my own. Could be terrible. We're still keeping the same format where Justin has no idea what's coming, and I do, but excited to see what he goes with. Schmidt is still such a key guy, and we did goals for every other skater, so I think for Nate Schmidt, we'll stick with goals. And I set the over-under Nate Schmidt goals this year at 10.5. It would be a career high. He had 9 last year, but that was in 61 games. I think he's going to play more games.
Interesting.
So what say you, 10.5 over-under goals?
10.5 over-under. Well, I think the gut feeling is to take the under because he has not scored that many in the NHL before. But you're right. Had he played 82 games, he probably would have last year. I'm still going with the under. He had 9 goals. 3 of those, I believe, came against an empty net. When he was in Washington, he scored 2, 1, 2, and 3, came to Vegas, and then scored 5 and 9. Under seems like a pretty safe bet, and if you see one of these odds pop up at a book, I would go ahead and run to that before
so
it changes.
So basically, I'm a terrible odds maker. Well,
I'm not saying that you're terrible. I'm saying that was terrible.
Okay. Well, I was going under anyway, so I probably should have lowered it 1. I just thought 9.5, he's going to play so much more than last year. Who knows? This might only be the second one we've agreed on, so maybe over is just a lock. I'm going under, though, too.
Yeah, I think under's probably a safe one there.
All right, well, that does it for today's player, Nate Schmidt. Hope you'll continue checking out every weekday a player a day podcast here on Vegas Golden Podcast. For Justin, I'm Case. Thanks for listening.